Report of the Ways and Means Committee hearing. Mr. Smith will note the roll. We don't have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, we'll revert to approval of the minutes. At this time, if I think what we'll do is we will have Representative Lanning go to the stand and begin to explain his bill. Again, members, this is a Senate file that's in front of us. The pages have access to the actual Senate file. If you'd like to review that, let them know. We did not make copies for every member, given that we're just going to insert the House language. You do have the House language in your packets. And Representative Lanning, we can't make any official action until we have a quorum here, but if you'd like to start explaining your bill in the spreadsheet, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you and go over briefly the explanation for House File 577, which was our vehicle bill to present our our omnibus state government finance bill. Members, we met our target. The original target was a huge one for us in state government finance.
Representative Lanning, I'm sorry, I'm going to officially call to order the meeting. We have a quorum. Representative Hamilton moves approval of the minutes of March 30th. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes for March 30th say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. We will then move to the State Government Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Lanning, if you would like to move the Senate file for consideration by the committee.
Madam Chair, I move the Senate file 1047 for consideration.
All right, thank you. And then at this point, we need a motion to insert the House language.
And Madam Chair, I would move to insert the language from House File 577 to the Senate file.
And that would be the second engrossment, members. It's purely a procedural move. Are there any questions on this? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. We now have the Senate file as amended in front of the committee. Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, do you want me to do the other the amendments now or later?
Why don't you explain your bill first?
Okay. Thank you. Well, members, as I was saying, we met our target. It was a huge target. The original target for state government finance was $443 million reduction from the 10-11 biennium. And if you took it from the base, it was actually $469 million. And individually, our committee was charged with coming up with some over $81 million in savings from general fund agencies and another $90 million. And what we've achieved with the bill that's before you is a reduction of $87,374,000 from the general fund and $94,875,000 from the other. And that resulted in a revised target. Our original target called for a 51.4% reduction in state government budgets, and the revised target put us at a 33% reduction. $602 million was the revised target. And Madam Chair, we appreciate the consideration that you gave to us in trying to give us a target that we could work with. Well, members, as you know, there are in our bill significant reductions for most of our agencies. We have proposed reductions greater than what the governor has proposed, but I want to point out that there is $256 million that we are in harmony with the governor. $256 million of spending that the governor's proposed is the same that we're proposing in this bill. The only areas to receive increase in this bill are Veterans Affairs and Military Affairs, which the governor also recommended increases. The range of reductions in this bill for constitutional offices, the range of reduction is between 8 and 12%. For major agencies and boards, it ranges from 8 to 20%. For small agencies and boards, it ranges from 8 to 15%. And for the legislature, it was a 7% reduction. Now, we all know that we just can't just simply reduce budgets, that we have to enact reforms. And I believe that there are many significant reforms in this bill, as many reforms in any one omnibus bill that I can ever recall in my tenure here at the legislature. We have in our bill identified $107 million in general fund savings. And if you look at the savings for across the board in the state, it's $303 million. And those numbers come from the spreadsheet, from the fiscal notes that we've had, that we've received as a committee. To give you more information about that, I'd like to ask Helen Roberts, our fiscal analyst, to go over the spreadsheet for you.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Roberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. You do have a spreadsheet in your packet, and although the chair has covered, I think, many of the highlights, I'll try to quickly just go through the first four pages that are marked as the general fund summary, and then if there are other questions, I'm here for that. I'm looking at the pages that look like this. And if you start with the legislature, you'll see that overall there's a 7% reduction to the legislature from the base. That's a $9.5 million reduction. As the chair noted, there is there are reductions to the constitutional offices of 8% for the governor, 12% for the state auditor, 12% for the attorney general, and 8% for the secretary of state. And I should note that the secretary of state does have a maintenance of effort requirement, which is why their reduction is slightly lower. For the campaign finance and public disclosure board, there's a 10% reduction. 10% also for the state investment board and the Office of Administrative Hearings. For the Office of Enterprise Technology, for their general fund budget, there's a 15% reduction. And then for the Department of Administration, overall, a 12% reduction, but that does include the reduction to public broadcasting, which is an 8% reduction. So actually, the change for the operations of the department is closer to 13%. The CAP board, another small board, you'll see is 10%. And then Minnesota Management and Budget has a 13% reduction. Moving on to the second page, you'll see for Department of Revenue, there's a 2% overall reduction. This is due to interaction of two things happening in that department, a 15% across the board cut. But then you'll also see within the bill there's some additional funding provided for additional compliance activities. So that nets out to a 2% reduction for that department. Amateur Sports Commission, 10%. And then you'll see the four councils, Black Minnesotans, the Council on Chicano Latino Affairs, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and the Council on Indian Affairs all have a 15% reduction. Explore Minnesota Tourism has a 10% reduction to base. Minnesota Historical Society at 12%. And again, I should note here, they have debt service built into their budget, so their reduction looks slightly smaller than some other comparable ones because we weren't able to apply a reduction to that part of their budget. The State Arts Board, a 20% reduction to their general fund. Humanities Commission, a 10%. Public Facilities Authority, this is a, the general fund portion for PFA is a small technical assistance grant program. You'll see that's a 100% reduction. The vast majority of funding for PFA is not from the general fund. The grant to the Science Museum of Minnesota is reduced by 15%. The contingent accounts, which is an appropriation made for emergencies when the legislature is out of session, the general fund portion is reduced 80%. The Minnesota State Retirement System, this the spreadsheet shows 100% reduction to legislators' retirement. And what this is the program for the pre-1997 retirees. That program was funded on and continues to be funded on a pay-as-you-go system. And so when legislators that are covered under that plan, that's not anyone that's been recently elected, retire, MSRS makes a calculation of what the annual cost of their benefit would be, and we make a general fund appropriation to cover that. Now, MSRS does have some money that is built up in the fund from the previous funding structure when we used to appropriate the lifetime benefit for those legislators. That funding system was changed in 2003. So we're using that balance to cover the appropriation just for these 2 years. This is a one-time change to that system. There is enough funding to cover the biennial need. Yes. So that just needed a little bit of explanation. And then finally, onto the last page, you'll see here are the changes for Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs. The $3,000 increase to Military Affairs is for the Enlistment Incentives Program, the Tuition Reimbursement Program, and then funding within Vets Affairs for the Higher Education Service Officers at the campuses, and then some additional funding for some of the vets' homes in Minneapolis and Fergus Falls. And just to summarize, the bill, as you know, at the bottom has net general fund spending of $601,958,000. That meets the target set by this committee. That includes direct spending authorized of $866.4 million. There's additional, there's then an across-the-board reduction of $94,875,000 that applies to all executive branch agencies, not just the agencies that are directly funded in this bill. That brought the net general fund spending to $771 million. Then in addition, the bill assumes new revenues of $169.6 million. So that brings us down to the net of $601.9 million.
All right, thank you. Representative Lanning, would you like to take your amendments at this time?
Okay, sure.
Representative Carlson.
When will there then be, after you're done with the amendments, an opportunity for some questions?
Certainly.
So I do have a few.
Yep, we'll get to
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lanning, is the A1 amendment yours?
Madam Chair, no. The A3 amendment is mine.
All righty.
And
let's start with the A3 amendment.
I would like
then
to move the A3 amendment.
All right, Representative Lanning moves the A3 amendment.
And Madam Chair and members, what this does on page 29 of the bill, lines 26 and 27, it deletes a provision that says a county audited by a certified public accountant firm cannot be required to pay to the state general fund any costs for the state auditor services. And the effect of this is that the state auditor would be allowed to charge the county for a review of any audit done by a private firm. So that's the amendment.
Any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A3 amendment is adopted. Representative Kiffmeyer, the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I am amending on page 4, lines 24 to 28, the language that pertains to the Help America Vote Act funds, and that this section be removed from this bill at this time. And I am in conversations with the Secretary of State office, and there's some other language coming forth in regards to the allocation of these funds. So at this time, my motion is to remove lines 4.23 to 4.28.
Are there any questions on the A2 amendment? Representative Kahn.
Yeah, well, Madam Chairman, I've also been in conversation with the Secretary of State's office, and I understand specifically dealing with Representative Kiffmeyer's former experience as Secretary of State, that she would like to have some more specific. She doesn't want this given just as a total appropriation. And, I have no objection to discussing that further, But I think you absolutely need this language to stay in here as a placeholder. And I think we're better off in the bill. What Representative Kiffmeyer's amendment would do is take out any mention of what we're going to do with the HAVA funds. And we really need the HAVA funds. Secretary of State needs the HAVA funds to maintain the state voter registration system, to add the functionality to make redistricting possible, and to continue to implement the data matching legislation that we put in last year for that. So I think there's an understanding on all sides that we'd like to have something more, or Representative Kiffmeyer would, and people don't object to the thought of having something that's a little bit more specific than just the appropriation on lines 24 to 28. But I think the better way to go about it is to leave that language in and come back with the specifics that Representative Kiffmeyer would like and put it in at that point, rather than have to bring in a totally new topic into the bill. So I'd oppose the amendment.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, would Representative Lanning yield for a question?
I'm sure he would.
Thank you. Representative Lanning, does Senate File 1047 have any language dealing with the Help America Vote Act? In other words, if this is stricken from the House file, will that language still be brought forward in a conference committee report, no, which this bill surely will go to?
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Biskins, I don't know the Senate version as well as I do our bill, but we'll take a look here and see.
Well, Representative Kahn.
Point of order, Madam Chairman. It is extremely bad, impolite, and extremely bad legislative policy to refer to anything that's being done in another body. And so it's that we do not take the Senate as our model. We draw up our own bill, and I think we should work at having the best bill that we could possibly have without thinking that we might have to be saved by something in a Senate bill.
Somehow I knew that was coming. Representative Biskin.
Well, Madam Chair. Madam.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, just confirmed that the Senate bill has the same language as the bill that you have before you now.
Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is $5 million, over $5 million, almost $5.2 million that has no specific designation, just the general purposes and uses authorized by federal law. And I think there are things that we here in Minnesota have particular uses for these funds, and that they need some division, this money being used, just a general appropriation. I remember a couple years ago, Representative Kahn, as we worked on this, the same kind of language came up, and at the time you and I had agreed that there should be specific authorization from the legislature for these funds. And so that general kind of broad language was not utilized 2 years ago either, and instead money was designated for particular purposes. So I appreciate your being okay with it this year, but I do take the same approach as I did before, as was consistent for all the years of the use of the Help America Vote Act dollars, that we would use these funds as designated specifically by the legislature, and that is not the case in this bill here today.
Well, Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman and Representative Kiffmeyer, I haven't disagreed with you. I've just said we should leave this language in here as a placeholder, and at some, you know, perhaps even a flaw amendment, or certainly later, we could have the specifics that you would like added to the bill, and we could work, and we could certainly do that. If you would come, instead of with a delete everything amendment, an amendment that had the specific kinds of things that we need to do it. And let me give an example of what what these funds need to be used for. One, we need to use them for maintenance and upgrades to the statewide voter registration system. I think Representative Downey is frequently noting that development costs need to be spent on maintenance each year, and so we certainly need to do maintenance. For the, so if there aren't funds to do this maintenance, we'll be impacting our local election officials. Also, the redistricting occurs this biennium, and the voter records in the polling place finder has to be updated to find reflect the new districts. It's and because this system was developed, it was developed since the last redistricting, and currently doesn't have the functionality needed to allow the county election officials to make these changes easily. So we need, you know, we really, there are lots of things that we need to do, I think that we'll all agree on, that we need to do. And this is, we need to use HALBA funds for this instead of state general funds. So we certainly don't want legislative, this was something that I learned of, actually, very specifically, that legislative candidates filed in the wrong districts because the polling place finder was not updated, and that as happened in 2002. And so, you know, we've added the Secretary of State's proposals to add checks against other databases to update the voter records and apply challenges to voters. All of these things, which I think there's broad support for in this committee, need to be done with these funds. So all I'm asking is, since you didn't come today with the specific things you wanted, and I think we've... you know, we've done a general appropriation, and then we've done the specific things at later times also, when we've had a specific plan from the Secretary of State. We have no objection to doing it. I'm saying it's very short-sighted to take all mention of the use of HALBA funds out of the bill.
Representative Kiffmeyer, and then Representative Slawik.
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'd like to point out on the spreadsheet for the Secretary of State Office under Computer Services, there already is a specific designation for the maintenance of those computer services, about $2.3 million on a biennial budget basis. So I think that there already is funds in regards to doing those basic maintenance features that they are supposed to be having, and we certainly do support that. The Help America Vote Act funds are for above and beyond because they have a maintenance of effort requirement that is already there, and the maintenance is for it that we do have. So I believe that this is funds not needed for the general operations and the computer services and the maintenance of the state voter registration system, and that previous funds had been appropriated for the work that needed to be done in regards to the implementation of those laws. But again, Representative Kahn, you and I can... work together on that. Look forward to doing that, and there are other bills coming forward that also would make use of these funds.
Well, what I'm Representative Kahn.
My suggestion is just that we leave this in here. Understand that the HALBA funds are part of the Secretary of State's appropriation, and we shouldn't just take it out. I mean, and say that we're going to replace the needs of that with state general funds.
Representative Slawik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to agree with Representative Kahn in that I think these funds are really important, and then if we need to leave them in and they are being used for specific purposes, I do have a question for Representative Kiffmeyer.
Certainly.
Representative Kiffmeyer, my understanding is that the HALBA funds include grant funds received from the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, and they're dedicated to make voting and polling places accessible to individuals with disabilities. So if we didn't have this appropriation, would we not be able to award the grants to cities and townships to make those improvements?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Slawik and members. No doubt about it, those type of specific appropriations have been done before, and certainly we, in regards to the legislature and designating those funds, would continue to do the same thing upon the presentation of the Secretary of State Office for those proposals and for the amount of funds needed for those individual areas. So certainly as they are necessary, those are a variety of the purpose. That's one of them. There are several categories. Not all of them are for specific polling place improvements. Some of the money is for that, but there are other uses that are allowed as well.
Representative Slawik.
So the point being made, I mean, if we delete this section of the bill and we delete the over $5 million that goes with it, then we're not going to be able to have things like the polling places improved for individuals with disabilities, and that's part of what the funds are for. I can't see why we would want to delete this part of the bill.
Representative Viskins. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Carlson.
I just wanted to ask Representative Kiffmeyer. She indicated in her introductory comments that she had a conversation with the Secretary of State or the Secretary of State's representatives, but I don't believe you shared with us what the outcome of the conversation was, just that you'd had a conversation. So if you could share with us what the Secretary of State's thoughts are about the amendment.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Carlson. Conversation similar to what I had discussed today, very similar conversation, and also the offer to, I wanted to hear more about their specific plans for these dollars, that it was a large amount of money for general purposes in regards to that, and so, but at the time there were some mentions of specific things, which I checked in regards to computer services, and indeed there is funding in this bill already for computer services, for the maintenance of the system, so the things that had been mentioned, it seemed to me there already was funding for those parts of the office.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the Secretary of State's office does not support the amendment at this time.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, they did not express support for this amendment. Representative Carlson.
Thank you.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick point of clarification. The reference has been made that we're somehow deleting an appropriation, and the appropriation in the bill is just the general fund support for the Secretary of State office broadly. That is not stricken in Representative Kiffmeyer's amendment. All she's doing is pulling out of the bill a permissive piece of language that says the Secretary of State may do whatever he wants with the HAVA funds that are sitting in the HAVA account. And based on the testimony that we heard in committee, I think that's probably a good idea. People need to realize the size and extent of the implementation of voting equipment and all kinds of other disability access provisions at polling places, a statewide voter registration system. And we've effectively now blown through that entire HAVA fund. There's still quite a few million dollars left there, and I think it warrants some legislative oversight to participate in what the Secretary of State plans to do with that. I think the ongoing maintenance commitments for the Help America Vote Act components that have been implemented far outstrip that funding amount, and some legislative attention is really warranted. So I'd support the Kiffmeyer Amendment.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I had hoped we could resolve this amicably, but I guess I would like a roll call vote. I think this a roll call on this. I mean, I think, Representative Downey, you're a member of the committee. If you know, I know that we've had reports from the Secretary of State's office. I've been pleased with what they've said about what they were doing with the HAVA votes. And several times they've come for to either tell us, I don't know if they needed a positive vote for reauthorization or just to tell us what they were doing. I would think if people felt that this was insufficient, the place to, and I didn't because I thought I've gotten good reports, so the people who felt this was insufficient had an obligation to bring it up in committee. And we could have put all of the tightening language, all of the specific language that Representative Kiffmeyer is now suggesting that we need. And all I'm saying is, I know it's late to be bringing it up, but there's no reason why we can't do this as this bill goes through the process. We know it may even have not only this bill itself, but it may have other iterations. And I just think with the understanding of this committee today ought to be that this language is in here as a placeholder, and we intend to tighten it up. And the people who are in charge are certainly in charge and will be able to do that. People on the conference committee will be able to make sure and get the language that either Representative Kiffmeyer or other people would suggest. But I think it's totally irresponsible to say that we have to be able, you know, again, you know, I hate to keep giving these lectures on legislative procedure because I'm not even the best most knowledgeable person on it, but we can't spend any federal money unless we've appropriated it. So if we're going to be able to spend this money for anything, we have to appropriate it. So I suggest we defeat. I would prefer Representative Kiffmeyer to just withdraw her amendment, because I don't think we ought to make a big deal about that, and we ought to have an understanding that we are going to tighten up this language and we are going to make it more specific.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kahn, you're far better at conference committee strategy than you're letting on. And I think we'd be better off if we actually had a slightly different position than the Senate in this section of the bill, if, in fact, we want Representative Kiffmeyer to have some latitude in conference committee to bring forward something new. If we both have the exact same position in our respective bills, it'll be a little harder to somehow carve them out at that point. So, I'd support Representative Kiffmeyer's amendment.
You know, again,
Representative Kahn.
I've had much more experience watching conference committees than I've had necessarily serving on them, but there is absolutely no constraint in having the same language when you discover that something needs to be done in a conference committee. It can always be done. There's no problem. There's no problem with this. And in this case, we might very well have agreements between the members of the conference committee that it should be tied. Now, I'm just saying, and, you know, Representative, I'm just saying that I believe this should have been, if we wanted this to be other than this language, and we wanted it to, you know, I mean, this is a huge amount. We're cutting out more than $10 million from the bill. And if it was so important to have it specific, I think that the people on the committee who felt it was so important should have brought it up. I think it's a little bit late to be doing that now.
Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, question to you. On the Kiffmeyer amendment, it looks like she is deleting lines 24 to 28, but the appropriation sits on line 23. Madam Chair, are we removing? I mean, if those words go away, does the money go away as well?
Representative Biskins, it does not.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to just leave this alone because I'm not on the committee, but I just want to say for the record, it's been my observation over many years here in the legislature that when it comes to the state government finance bill, the least partisan member of the legislature is Representative Kahn, and I've seen her working with Representative Krinke and Representative De La Forest, and I don't know who all she's managed to work with in a bipartisan way and had a bill that's supported. So when we come to this impasse in the state government finance bill over something like this, it sounds like there's not a disagreement about spelling out what should go in here. It's just over taking it out altogether. I lament that that we don't have an amendment to spell things out instead of just take it out at this point.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, I think, has raised a valid question here about how these funds should be used and that the need for some legislative oversight. And that analysis needs to happen, given her question, whether this language is in the bill or not. By it not being in and our having a difference with the Senate, I think it opens up more of a conversation in conference committee than it might otherwise. And so I understand the point that Representative Kahn is making, and regardless of whether that language is in or out, we need to have a conversation with the Senate about the particulars.
All right, members, we've had quite a lot of conversation about the Kiffmeyer Amendment. Are there any other burning questions or comments, Representative Kiffmeyer?
Just one quick thing, Madam Chair. To deal with this in the best way possible, should I include line 23 or
the whole? Representative Kiffmeyer, no, because then we'd spend the rest of the night deciding how to spend the money.
Okay.
Well,
all right. Then I'll leave it as is. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kahn.
You know, the appropriation is removed. The appropriation is removed by saying by taking away the language that appropriates the federal funds. You can't. Yes, it is. You can't spend federal funds with that language saying that you that without appropriating them.
Madam Chair, I think our fiscal analyst has
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair, members, the appropriation in line 4.23 is the general fund appropriation to the Secretary of State for their operations. The language in 4.24 to 4.28 is specific to the HAVA funds that are in the special revenue account. So if you did remove 4.23, you would be removing all of the funding for the general fund operations of the Secretary of State.
That would not be my intention, Madam Chair, whatsoever.
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, then how much in 4.24 to 4.28, what is the dollar amount of funds available in the account established in Minnesota Statutes 5.30? Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, the information I received from the Secretary of State in January projected a balance in that account at the end of this fiscal year of $2.1 million. I don't know what the balance is today, I'm sorry, but that was their projection for what would be available for the next biennium.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On occasion, the Help America Vote Act funds have continued, so that's what is there at this time. But on occasion, the federal government has also authorized additional funds.
All right, members, any additional? Representative Kahn.
Well, taking this language out now says a House position that we don't care about doing the cross-checking that we thought was so important about database, making sure that databases, making sure that voters are legally able to work to vote where they're voting. We don't care about having the districts from the Secretary of State's website in place so that people, when they look at the Secretary of State's website, are not misled about what the boundaries of the district are, so you have someone filing in a wrong district and someone having to go to court to get them off the ballot because they had filed in the wrong district. And and all of these things are very good for the general public. Again, the disability, the making polling places accessible for disability. Secretary of State did a fantastic job on having every polling place accessible for people who couldn't, a voting machine in every polling place for people who were blind and having that system ready. I don't think any other state did that quite as well. Our military voting also ended up just being, this state had the best record of military voting turnaround and so forth. All of these things are done with the HAVA funds. And to put constraints on using it, other than the ones that the legislature has discussed and that we think are reasonable, I just think is an attack on democracy in this state. So
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, I'd like to ask you a question. This morning I heard from my local county officials, and they expressed serious concern about this amendment, and I'm wondering what your interpretation of that concern would be. They think it will have serious consequences for their ability to perform their responsibilities in delivering fair and local elections and so forth. So I'm just wondering how you interpret that county concern.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Reinhart. Again, and the Secretary of State's expenses for the computer services are already funded, and the state voter registration system is actually quite well prepared to be able to go forward. And again, the business services are funded, the administration of the office, the elections of the office. These funds that are there are for them to do their routine and normal process of the execution of the office. And I also have expressed to the Secretary of State that we would discuss the legislative authority for the balance of funds to designate them for some particular purposes. And there is other legislation that is being considered as well. So I think it's only fair that we give the time for the Secretary of State Office and myself to have that discussion and let those things work through the process, and not just give a blanket appropriation without any legislative specific authority. But again, Representative Brenner, their funding and the issues that matter to them are already in the Secretary of State Office funding in the base budget.
Good. Representative Sarah Anderson.
I'll ask offline, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, I'll pass at this point, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Could we hear from the Secretary of State's office about what this language needs to be used for?
Representative Kahn, the language is very broad in that it allows for any use allowed by the federal government. In listening to everybody, add their 2 cents worth. I guess I have a question for the bill author. Representative Lanning, would it be your intent before this bill was signed into law that you would provide guidance and direction to the Secretary of State's office for the legislative priorities for the expenditure of the HAVA funds?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you.
That is clearly what needs to be our intent.
Thank you, members. With that, we will take
Representative Carlson. On that point, then, how is that input going to be provided?
Well, Representative Carlson, as you well know, there's opportunities for amendments on the House floor. There's also opportunities for plenty of testimony in the conference committee process. I'm sure the administration, the Secretary of State's office will all weigh in on this process, and I'm guessing that there was also testimony in committee on the use of HAVA funds as well. So
we're not
going to solve this tonight.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
You know, I don't disagree with anything you said, and I think the proper procedure would be to leave this language in here and to work on this, you know, before it gets to the floor or before it's finished with conference committee, and get the things that we think are appropriate for the funding and with the discussion with the Secretary of State's office.
And Representative Kahn, I think it's just a matter of how you look at it. Some legislators are comfortable with nice, broad language that allows all kinds of uses, which is what I've used in front of us. Some legislators would prefer language in bills that is very targeted and direct as far as how money should be spent. It's just a different way of looking at it. I mean, we spent over a half hour on this amendment, which is fine, but I think it's just a matter of how you look at the issue. I think in the end, we're going to end up with the same result. Representative Carlson.
I wasn't quite done. I've been here like Representative Kahn for quite a few years, and you outlined the traditional ways for input, but there are members of this committee that have expressed an interest in input, and sometimes there's discussions that will take place as the bill goes through the process. Yes, there's room for amendments on the floor or in conference committee, but my question was centered more on those people that have an interest in the issue that may not be on a conference committee. I think we know what's sometimes happening to some of our amendments on the House floor. So wanted to perhaps get some assurance from the author of the bill that there would be an opportunity for those people that are interested on this committee at least, and perhaps the State Department's division, to have some input.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, of course.
Well,
we welcome, and I'm going to want to hear what Representative Kiffmeyer has by way of specifics, and I'd like to have an opportunity that anybody has an interest in that to talk to us about it.
Representative Kahn.
Well, if one would like some limitation on it, for example, you could add the language, I believe it's subject to the process of Minnesota Statutes 3.13, I think, which is the Legislative Advisory Committee process. That would then, that language could be put into here so that it's not totally wide open.
Well, right now we have an amendment in front of us to delete this language. That's what the action is before the committee. We will have a roll call vote on that. I'm assuming that if that doesn't pass, that we would entertain a verbal amendment to the language if it survives the amendment that's in front of us. Are there any additional questions? Seeing none, Mr. Smith will take the roll on the A3 amendment.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Madam Chair,
I'm sorry.
I think it's the A1 amendment.
I'm sorry. Thank you. The A1 amendment.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Abler. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Breinart.
No.
Representative Biskins.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Howes.
Yes.
Representative Huntley.
No.
Representative Kahn.
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Aye.
Representative Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Rukavina.
No.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Westrom.
Yes.
By a vote of 18-13, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. I now have the A2 amendment that was distributed in the packet. I don't know if anybody wants to move the A2 amendment. It's my understanding it's not an author's amendment. Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to move the A2 amendment. And I did intend to, but just ran out of time. Speak to both Representative Downey and Chairman Lanning about this amendment. This is the composition of the advisory committee to the Office of Economic Technology, and this would just would add one member as a representative of the union that represents state information technology employees. I think that process of having people from labor and business work really well on the Commission on Innovation, and I think it would work equally well here.
Representative Lanning?
Well, Madam Chair and members, I would be open to this. But I would prefer not to do that at this time, and so I would ask that you reject the amendment at this point in time.
All right. Any questions on the A2 amendment?
Well,
Representative Kahn.
You know, again, it's much preferable to put everything that you might be open to in the bill so that it's out there and we can see it and we can. And it is some, you know, I don't expect to follow this bill any further than the floor. And I don't think, I think the fewer amendments that we take on the floor, the better it is. And I think if this is something that people do not object to and that they do think that when you're having an advisory committee, it's really worth something to have the people in state government who have been working with the system being part of that advisory committee, you know, I'm just the people who have been and who are going to have to, for some large amount of time, are going to have to be working on the working on it after it's after changes are made, be in part of the in part of this discussion. I thought that this would be something that would have just universal support. Does anyone see anything wrong with this, as opposed to the answer I might be open into doing it later?
Any other questions or comments? This Representative Kahn's asked for feedback. I'm seeing lots of blank faces here, so any additional questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Campion, it's my understanding that you are withdrawing the A4 amendment at this time.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you very much. I am not aware of any additional amendments being submitted to the committee. I'm assuming that there will be questions on the bill as amended. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative, or Madam Chair, and Representative Lanning, or maybe it's for Representative Howes. You know, I don't serve on your committee, and I was just reading the bill, and it looks like you've got some bonding in here. And in inquiring kind of around the table, it looks like the bonding was sent to Representative Howes and back to you. And, maybe someone can explain to me. I've never seen bonding in a bill other than in the capital investment bill or in the public finance bill of the tax area. And yet I see we have bonding in this bill. I'm wondering if just anyone can explain that to me, what's going on here.
And Representative Lencheski, maybe for the rest of the committee, if you let them know what page it's on.
Page 37.
Thank you.
And, I don't know if that means your bill takes 81 votes now on the floor. But it is state bonding. I know it's not GEO, but it's an appropriations bond, which gets a little iffy at best. But even those are generally carried then in the tax bill if they're not carried in the capital investment bill. So I'm just trying to understand, maybe from the chair of the bonding committee or Madam Chair, you or the author of this bill, why bonding is in this bill.
Junk bond.
Remember, since you've been getting a lot of static tonight, so your cell phone should be turned off. Not on vibrate. Is it on? We're glad that he's still talking to at least someone in the room, Representative Garofalo. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And very happy to have us discuss this question. Maybe I need to ask, are we sort of going to stick around? I had thought maybe if we could see if there are other questions on Articles 1 and 2, that we could address those first and then move on to language in Articles 3 and 4. But if you'd prefer that we just skip around, that's fine too. I just thought it would make more sense as long as we have Ms. Roberts here for any of the numbers questions, and then we might ask Mr. Shepherd to come forward and help address some of the technical language questions that there might be. So do you have a preference, Madam Chair? And I want to address Representative Lencheski's question, but
well, if we might, maybe we've started with Representative Lencheski, if we could answer her question, and then we'll ask her questions on Article 1 or 2 as a next step. So I don't know if Mr. Shepherd needs to come down to field this one at this point, or...
Yes, Mr. Shepherd needs to speak to this, but
and
let me just say that this idea... This innovative reform idea is one where we would have these bonds that would help, let's say, nonprofits who have a successful program that's proven to be successful in achieving positive outcomes be able to qualify for this. And the funds would not be, we would not be selling bonds in the traditional way for this proposal. Mr. Shepherd, maybe it'd be better to explain that.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, members, Mark Shepherd from the House Research Department. The language that Representative Lencheski is referring to is on page 37 of the bill, section 38, which authorizes the issuance of bonds for a pay-for-performance program. In response to the one direct question that Representative Lencheski asked, this would not require a three-fifths vote on the House floor because it is not issuance of public debt. These bonds are not backed by a tax or statewide application. They're backed only by the appropriation that's in this bill and that would be in future bills to pay off these bonds.
Madam Chair. Representative Lencheski.
Well, if I may, as a follow-up, because since Mr. Shepherd is here, and I certainly want to ask you a political question. That's not your role. But in reading further now on page 39, then, the no-fold faith and credit, and I understand what you're saying, not a three-fifths since the state's not backing. You know, I think in general people call these junk bonds. Can you, and maybe it's a question for Ms. Novak, but can you opine who might buy a bond like this? I mean, it's hard to imagine anybody would want to buy a bond like this. It's backed simply by this bill, which is directing the other departments and the other agencies in the state, if these cuts don't work out, that they'll cut other things, and there's no, you know, there's nobody guaranteeing. I mean, I guess I wouldn't buy a bond like this because the state isn't going to step in if this fails. So I'm just trying to understand who is the target market for an appropriation bond.
Representative Lencheski, I think we're going to let Representative Downey answer your question.
Well, Madam Chair, and I would appreciate that if that's his bill. I was trying to get sort of the nonpartisan view of what kind of investors pay for a bond that's not backed by anybody. So I think I might be able to guess what Representative Downey would say, but I was trying to think of Moody's and Fitch's and Standard & Poor's, and kind of as they would look at these sort of bonds in rating us, what might they say? And, you know, I mean, I'm happy to take Representative Downey's question, but that's not really what I was looking for. But
well, and if you'd prefer, we can go to Mr. Shepherd first and then Mr. Downey, if
yes,
that's
please.
Your... Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair, members, I don't have any information to respond to your question. I don't have information on what the bond ratings have been for similar products, so I'm sorry I can't answer that.
Thank you. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll try to answer your question directly, and I'm glad to have a broader discussion or explain the intent of the program. But my understanding is that these would be AA bonds. I believe the initial projections by bond counsel is that they would be somewhere in the 4% interest range. I know the department scored the bill and the fiscal notes at, I think, 6.5%, an extremely, I think, conservative position. I don't think it would be fair to characterize these at all as junk bonds. We've used appropriation bonds for other purposes in the past. They are slightly different than a GO bond in that they depend upon the ongoing appropriations of the state to pay them off. But I would direct your attention to lines 38.2 through 38.7. It does indicate that the commissioner can only sell bonds in an amount where there is an ability to actually pay off the debt service through the return on investment to the state. And the programs that would actually receive the proceeds of the bonds upon generating those outcomes would only be paid the proceeds from the bonds at the point that they have actually generated the return on investment to the state that we can actually book and pay off the debt service on the bonds. So the entire program here is designed to create a pay-for-performance mechanism for organizations that routinely tout a significant return on investment to the state. This program would allow us in an innovative way to start tracking the outcomes and the metrics of those organizations, and at the point that they actually do generate that kind of return on investment to the state. We would actually pay them from the proceeds of the bonds, and then the savings at the state would actually pay the debt service on the bonds. So it's an innovative new mechanism designed, in fact, by the nonprofit community that we are supporting here, and I think it's one that really has merit and would encourage the state to look at paying for performance and outcomes as compared to simply appropriating for expenditures and inputs in those programs.
Representative Munchesky.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and it's nice to have all the decision makers in the room, because I heard the three-fifths argument. I still don't know why it wouldn't be in Representative Howe's bill. It's a bonding bill, or Representative David's bill. Can you tell me, Representative Downey, is the tax treatment similar? Are these tax-exempt bonds? Is that because having it not being carried in one of the two bills that I think most members trust has given a thorough review of bonding, can you explain the tax status of this appropriation bond?
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lencheski. These are not tax exempt and therefore the higher interest rate.
Madam Chair, I'll leave the issue alone. I wish one of the two chairs would tell us why they're not carrying this bill, but I think they don't want to respond.
All right. What I'd like to do, unless there's questions, Representative Howes, would you like to weigh in?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Lencheski, Mr. Shepard explained it rather well. It's not state debt, so it does not have to go to Capital Investment Committee, and it only requires 68 votes.
Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The Capital Investment Bill often has bills, bonding that isn't completely state, but occasionally, for the Public Facilities Authority or whatever, things go through there. But then if it's not, then Chair David's would carry those provisions, so maybe Chair Davids could tell us why it's not in the public finance article of the tax bill. I'm not trying to be difficult. I have never seen a bonding bill in state gov finance, and maybe there'll be a bonding bill in the Health and Human Services bill next, and maybe in all the omnibus bills. I've never seen it, so I'm just wondering what it's doing in this bill.
All right. Representative Wagenius, is it just to this point, because then we're going to back up to Articles 1 and 2 of the bill.
Thank you. Yes. For Representative Downey, since it's your bill, what you've proposed to me, because I haven't heard it before, is very theoretical. And what I understand from your theory is that we're really engaging in debt to pay current operating costs. Why is that not true?
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Absolutely not true. It couldn't be further from the truth, and this isn't really new territory. There actually is an organization that is funded in the Workforce Development Bill, Twin Cities Rise, that works with ex-cons and people in kind of on the edge of the criminal justice system to develop workforce skills and place them in jobs. And the state of Minnesota has a pay-for-performance program with them, the only one I'm aware of, where we actually don't pay that organization until and unless they place a person in a job, and then there's a second payment when that person has had the job for a year with health care benefits. And so they are currently on a pay-for-performance program with the state, and this is a mechanism that the nonprofits and many of these organizations and programs are highly supportive of to try and draw private capital into the equation and to leverage a state appropriation bond mechanism to get more capital into the hands of these organizations that are very firmly convinced that they have a return on investment that can be demonstrated to the state.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I get paid for performance. I still don't get how you justify that this is not borrowing to pay for performance. So we say we get the best performance. I mean, Art Rolnick told us we got the best performance, best payback in state dollars for early childhood education. And I think he is probably the most believable economist in the state. How does that pay performance work here? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that we're just not paying operating expenses.
Yeah. Tony, and then Representative Carlson.
Cut mine off.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Wagenius. Actually, Art Rolnick is a primary supporter of this proposal, as I should have brought the list of nonprofits and other organizations that support this concept. So, I mean, all I can tell you is that this is a new mechanism. It'd be a pilot program, one wherein if organizations can substantiate the benefit to the state and we can book those savings and pay off the bonds, the state has served as a catalyst to getting private capital engaged in those ventures in a way that we just can't today. I think the intention is that it is additive and not supplanting. And to the extent that the state can prime the pump and get that mechanism going, we're doing that here with this program.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius is absolutely right. We're going into deficit financing to the tune of $20 million to fund a program that should be funded out of the general fund this biennium. And what people have to remember is that these are 20-year bonds, and the testimony we had in the Capital Investment Committee was that, and Representative Downey referenced it, that they would probably be about 6.5%. That's what the current market is. So if you keep in mind 6.5% for 20 years to fund a program this year, now I don't argue with the programs that they're attempting to fund here, but they're actually trying to prop up the general fund. Some of us may remember quite well the appropriation bonds when Governor Pawlenty wanted to put the state of Minnesota right into deficit financing to the tune of $1 billion. And that was resoundingly defeated on the House floor in a very strong bipartisan vote, both sides of the aisle, because we felt that it was not a good way to go. Now, this isn't a billion, but it is $20 million, and the principle that's on the table here is a very important one in terms of what road we would be on. And I would remind members that we do have a constitutional requirement that we have a balanced budget, and I think this is just simply an attempt to skirt that constitutional requirement of having a balanced budget, but it's a poor way to go in spite of the good work that the organizations that we're talking about here do happen to do, but that should be the general fund's work.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Lucheski, we heard the bill in the bonding committee. Representative Downey, I don't remember anybody using this, particularly Twin Cities Rise. And as for the question on who'd buy these bonds, as the worst capitalist in the legislature and the CEO of the bond rating company of Rukavina, Bushwhacker, and Stump Jumper, I'm probably the only one in the audience that would buy one of these bonds. So, but that's my own.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, I have a question for you. When you're talking about we already do this,
it
sounds to me like you're talking about pay for performance. And so my question to you is Art Rolnick supporting pay for performance, or is he supporting these bonds?
Representative Downey.
Madam Chair, he is supporting both, and my answer to Representative Wagenius was specific to the fact that we have never done pay for performance in state government. We actually do pay for performance in state government right now, not using this mechanism. So if I was unclear in my answer, it's the appropriation bond component that would be new in the part of it that we're piloting. And he and a long list of other organizations with which you're very familiar are very supportive and are the ones who actually brought this proposal to me.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think that clears up a lot as far as the pay for performance having been done. I'm fine with pay for performance. I think what Twin Cities Rise does with that is what we have arranged with them is a very good thing. I wish we did more in other areas of extended employment, had some accountability for who's actually getting jobs and are they well-paying jobs or with health benefits. And I think that's a good topic, but it's the bonds and this appropriation bond nature of it that Representative Lucheski and others have brought up, and I too have great concerns about those. I remember, like Representative Carlson, when these were proposed, former Representative Bernie Leader, who was not a person who complained about very many things, actually was inspired to write a very strong editorial in the paper not to have these kind of arrangements for transportation. And so that's the part I'm very concerned. And when you say other groups support it, what I worry about is that they support the pay-for-performance so strongly, and then they know that there are very few ways to get any money out of this legislature, that they're not doing the due diligence that I wish they were doing with the mode of paying for what is probably what they really do is support the pay-for-performance.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downing, I think you just made the argument that we are doing debt for operating costs, because we do have a program now that is paid for performance, and we're paying for it. Good. I am all for pay for performance, too, but we are paying for the pay for performance. This adds a whole new way of doing business, which is essentially substituting debt for general fund. A very bad idea. Not very Republican either.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we had a really good discussion in government operations and state government finance and capital investment on these very topics. And I've heard almost universal acclaim saying that we're all for pay for performance. And yet, from what I understand, so far I've seen about $715,000 out of our $60 billion state complex that actually is geared towards it. So I think this is an appropriate time to move even further in that direction. And you know, we talk about return on investment, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard somebody down here say, oh, we got a 4-to-1 return on investment, 19-to-1. And I ask myself, so someone's got a 400% return on investment, 1,900% return on investment. Most of us are out there trying to get 4 or 5% return on investment. 1,900%, 400%. So if there really is that kind of return on investment to the state, let's track it and let's use this kind of a mechanism. And I can tell you the bond markets are interested. The large nonprofits that are absolutely convinced that they do have this kind of return on investment are for it. And I think at a time like this, when the nonprofits don't have any money, the public sector doesn't have any money, and we want to engage people in good work that actually really does have a return on investment, why not engage private equity? Why not engage private capital through bonds to help fund those organizations if, in fact, they can prove their return on investment? And if they can't, I think we need to ask why we would have been appropriating directly to them in the first place.
All right. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of points to the discussion. The way I look at this is an opportunity to provide supplemental support to programs that have proven to be successful. I don't see this as a substitute for what the state is now currently providing, but an opportunity for successful programs that nonprofits maybe have to add to their resources. And let me also remind you of another point here. Local governments for years have had the opportunity to authorize bonds that don't pledge their full faith and credit, bonds that are used for various purposes within the community, let's say housing projects or institutional needs, private sector, nonprofit sector, nonprofit uses. And so this is not anything that's brand new to Minnesota, brand new to our system of government.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Lanning, to that point, aren't they revenue bonds that you're talking about? I've never heard of this appropriation bond, the things for housing and that. They're revenue bonds. Are they not?
All yes, some are revenue bonds, yes.
I'd say most of them are. And most of the time, members, I know because, you know, we did a few revenue bonds at IRRRB, too, and, you know, when you're not making a revenue, you got to pay anyhow because you're part of government, and same with any city or the state. So in a sense, we're going to end up back in these bonds, just like Representative Lincheski said. And I can't believe that they're not in Representative Howe's bill.
All right. Representative Breinhart, real briefly, and then I think the bill author wants to go back to Articles 1 and 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't think we can totally address this here, but it's for Representative Downey's discussion on return on investment. And I wish I had sat in on some of this discussion because it's very interesting, and I really support the pay for performance model, but I'm going to ask, if you look at the timeline on return for investment in these programs, you're asking for the turnaround in the biennium, because if you look at somebody like Art Rolnick's data on early childhood investment, that return on investment is over the lifetime of that child, that's 16%. So you're not going to have anybody investing that in that and supporting bonds, even though we have established research supporting that sort of return. So I don't understand the timeline for this investment philosophy.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Brenner, you raise a good point. The potential organizations that could actually benefit from this, number one, have to be able to manage their cash flow through the point that they can actually generate and demonstrate the return and the outcome to the state. And secondly, they have to be organizations that can actually demonstrate a bookable savings to state government in a way that can actually pay the debt service. So it is not every organization. I think your question might have presumed what a lot of others are, that somehow we're going to start using this program to fund every component of state government. And there clearly are a limited set of organizations out there who are in a position and who can demonstrate and measure what they do and turn around the return that quickly to actually fit the program. And those are the ones that we'd be looking for in the pilots.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Downey, I do know of one thing where we did get really guaranteed pay for performance and return on investment, and that's the tax compliance effort. So shouldn't we fund that with pay for performance bonds or do appropriation bonds for tax compliance? That's the one thing where we have data over 3 or 4 biennia, I believe.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, everyone that I've ever talked to this program about, the creative wheels start spinning as to the potential application of this. What you just described is not contemplated, nor is it defined in terms of the types of organizations that might be funded from this, but the wheels start turning.
No,
Representative Kahn, I don't know if we want Keith's wheels to start turning again.
I have been accused of creativity in my legislative career, but I assure you, Representative Downey, I have never done anything as creative as this bill.
Madam Chair, I
Representative
take
Downey,
that as a
be
compliment.
Careful. Okay. Representative Lanning, did you want to add to this discussion? I thought maybe you had your hand up.
No, okay. Madam Chair.
All right. Are there any questions on Articles 1 or 2 of the bill, the appropriations and the military affairs? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, my question, I think, fits Articles 1 and 2 and the bill generally, but are all of the articles that have a fiscal impact supported with a fiscal note?
Representative Downey.
No.
I'm sorry, Representative Lanning.
I'm not asking that.
I'm looking right at him, calling him the wrong name. My apologies.
I should have.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson. Yes, the I could go down the list of bills that are supported by fiscal notes. The House File 4, the workforce reduction. The fiscal note shows just under 74 million benefit to the general fund, 230 million overall. The salary freeze, House File 127, general fund savings of just under 42 million, and overall all state accounts 61.7. The House File 192, Reinventing Government, has a general fund savings of 13,404 and overall 49,411. the House File 1024. This is the one that says no more assistant commissioners and only one deputy, with the exception being Veterans Affairs. That has a general fund savings of $6.8 million, overall $11 million. The bill, the House File 1090, which calls for the audit of dependents that have coverage under our state employee insurance. That fiscal note there from our expert shows $5,177,000 general fund, $16,176,000 overall. And then House File 864, which is the federal offset, shows a $4.3 million general fund, which also then is total for overall. We feel that that is greatly understated with the fiscal note. We believe that that number is really very low in comparison to what the reality would be. And all of those things add up to over $100 million for the general fund.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Representative Lanning, so there's not a single provision in here that doesn't have a fiscal note as prepared by the Department of Finance to support your numbers? You haven't, in other words, just simply booked numbers with your own internal estimates as opposed to the Department of Finance? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, let me add to what I've said is we don't have a fiscal note on House File 174, which is the tax analytics, and we believe that there's substantial savings that will accrue from that. We don't have a fiscal note, so we can't give you a fiscal note in that case.
Well, Madam Chair, could I ask, because that's one of the ones that was on my list that was not supported with a fiscal note. And Representative Lanning, then what is the number for House File 174 that you're booking where you're expecting savings without the support of a fiscal note? And I might footnote, Madam Chair, when we had the Finance Committee that I chaired, there was not a bill that we would take up that hadn't been supported by a fiscal note. Sometimes I would disagree with what the fiscal note said, but we always had a fiscal note for any bill that was being reported out or any article within those bills. So, Representative Lanning, what are you booking for House File 174 then without a fiscal note?
Ask Ms. Roberts to answer your question.
Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair, members, $133 million for the biennium. You can find that online, 1,117 of the detailed spreadsheet.
Just a minute. So, Representative
Madam
Carlson.
Chair, so then $133 million in basically unsubstantiated numbers in terms of meeting the target in this bill. So I don't know whether to what to call that, but maybe if I'll temporarily yield to my colleague, Madam Chair, but I did have a question if there were any more articles in the bill that are not supported with a fiscal note in addition to House File 174, but I'll temporarily
and
yield.
If I might, Representative Lanning's trying to respond to your comments, so I'd like to give him the opportunity, and then we'll go to Representative Slawick next. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We also provided, we booked in here $34 million in cost to yield $133 million in savings. So we're looking at a net of around 98, not 133.
Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I sit on the committee, and Representative Lanning, as you know, we went through this a number of times. And to the fiscal analyst, by booking $133 million for this, the only way traditionally in the legislature we don't book savings. And so they said the only way to do that would be then down later in the bill that the Commissioner of Revenue and of Management and Budget would have to make a decision if that money didn't come in as to where that would go. And as you know, I had an amendment at the end of committee and before the final bill, because it is our job as a legislature to decide what happens to the appropriations. And so my question, Madam Chair, and to Representative Lanning is how can you have the commissioner deciding to do that, and how will they know, at what point are they going to know if it came in or didn't come in, and isn't that the legislature's responsibility? I mean, that's what we're elected to do, is to come here and make the budget.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Slawick. I wish we had a pistol note on House File 174 on the tax analytics. And I believe that there are substantial numbers there. We've seen that in other states. We have talked with people who clearly feel that there is a substantial amount of revenue that's available to us. The Department of Revenue has indicated an interest in the tax analytics, but they have acknowledged that they don't have the expertise or the wherewithal to apply those sophisticated techniques in trying to identify folks who have not paid their full share of taxes, what they ought to be paying. And so we've put in here that we would provide them $34 million, that they would be able to acquire that expertise to go out and do the kind of work that you need to do to capture 133 or whatever the number ends up being. And, you know, I'm very frustrated by the fact that we can't get any number when the department even acknowledges that they have an interest in this. They think there is potential here, but we have no number in a fiscal note.
Representative Slawick.
Madam Chair, just to finish up, I think that what they've told us and the Department of Revenue has talked about this is they have their own staff that do tax compliance issues, that work on these issues, and that we don't necessarily need to go to an outside vendor to do this. And it isn't guaranteed at all that $133 million is going to come in from this proposal. So, and we're as frustrated as you, more so because in the legislature, as past precedents, is we don't book money that we're not sure that we have. And this bill, and we talked about, and I think this is probably where Representative Carlson is going, is we know that Chair Holberg is going to certify these numbers today. Yet you've clearly said we're not sure that that money is going to come in. So it's a very frustrating situation for us to see these bills go forward without substantial evidence that's going to happen. It's kind of like the CGIP audit. We had the guy testify about they're going to come in and audit all the people who have state insurance and their families, and, you know, if somebody shouldn't be on there, they're going to kick them off, and that's going to save a bunch of money. But we're really not sure how much that one saves either. And typically, the legislature has not gone into these types of ventures because we're state government. We don't do things like that. We're supposed to have sound accounting practices and to book money and to be able to count money that is real.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Slawick, we do have a fiscal note on the CGIP audit. I quoted those numbers. They came from Mr. Morocco, who I think all of us recognize is an expert when it comes to our insurance program. And so it's not fair to say that we don't have it. We do have it.
Just to clarify, I think the last time I had not seen that, so that must have come in since then. But on this one, on the tax analytics, we definitely don't. There is no fiscal note.
All right. Any additional questions on Article 1 or 2? Well, Representative Lanchesky.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I do have more questions on the whole revenue piece, which is cited in Article 1 and 2, but I think the mechanics are in Article 3, so I don't know how you want to take the questions.
I'm trying to respect the bill author's wishes here, so Representative Lanning, you...
If Madam Chair, if there are no further questions about Article 1 and 2, let's move on to the others.
All right. Representative Lanchesky.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and it looks like, you know, we're starting to discuss some of the issues as it relates to the Department of Revenue, and I'm trying to understand it honestly.
And Representative Lanning, you've served on the Tax Committee, and you know that the account sits with you, and at the Minnesota House bipartisanly for years has fought to keep the account for compliance in state gov finance. And I think you know that the Senate has always hoped that this account would be held in the Tax Committee. And I think bipartisanly, we've all thought the right place for this account is in state gov finance. Nonetheless, you know, the Tax Committee normally hears these provisions and did this year, and it was a very interesting presentation, and the person who testified with Representative Pepin, I can't remember his name, but he acknowledged what I think you know, which is that Minnesota does a better job as a percentage of compliance than about anybody in the country already. And, you know, I'm honestly having a hard time understanding this one, because the speeches that took place in the Tax Committee were, from the majority side, I'll be honest, were, we can't do any more compliance. It's a police state out there. People are, you know, feeling like they're being invaded, and people are coming in and shaking them down and taking money out of their couch cushions, and we should just stop the compliance because, you know, it's so oppressive. And I actually, and now you're carrying a major compliance initiative in your bill, and I actually, at the time, you know, I talked about, as you know, our Office of Legislative Audit report on compliance. And this is something people on the Tax Committee care a lot about, and Minnesota has had a very fruitful compliance initiative over and over and over, as Representative Kahn walked through, in kind of, you know, going after the low-hanging fruit and moving along through the process. And the testifier acknowledged that Minnesota's doing such a good job, it'll be pretty difficult to meet sort of the claims that they have had in other states, because the ratio in other states looks pretty rosy, like there's easy money to be had. And as Tax Committee members drilled down, it became clear that even the proposer of the tax analytics, one of the companies who does this, sort of acknowledged Minnesota might be a little tougher than most since we're doing such a good job. But, you know, I'm really trying to understand, you know, it feels really insulting, honestly, to me, to the people who work at the Department of Revenue. They are working full-time. They are professional, nonpartisan people who do tax compliance. And we've hired lots of people to do more tax compliance under former Commissioner Ines's leadership. And so now, if I understand the bill, some of those people will lose their jobs if this doesn't work, and some outside vendor will attempt to collect this money. And there's money booked for finding this $98 million. But as I read Mr. Salamone's information, you know, he walked through, you know, all the job loss, and therefore, and states in this letter to you that if this bill requires a 15% reduction in his department and will result in an estimated loss of $111 million to the general fund. So I'm having a hard time seeing what how the pieces are moving around here. It seems to me that if somebody out in the world of tax analytics can do a better job, and I'm not saying they can't, maybe they can, but the risk is if it doesn't work, then a bunch of people who currently work in the state lose their job, and we're all trying to create jobs, not lose jobs here. And then somebody else, not the legislature, as Representative Slavik was just walking through, has to decide where the cuts are. You know, somebody who's in an agency, not us, and it's our job. Why not find the cuts in your target to make your target, since most of the majority members have said we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem, so why not cut? As stated, that's what needs to be done. Let's shrink government. Let's cut. You know, stop raising revenue. Start cutting. And this bill has revenue raised by Representative Downey's bill through appropriation bonds. You're raising revenue through Representative Pepin's bill. If people want to cut, let's start cutting. Stop raising revenue. Stop putting revenue pieces throughout all these bills. And if this is such a good idea, then just divert to any new collections to build up the cash reserve or the budget reserve or the cash flow account. You know, it seems risky to me. Just honestly, it seems risky to book this stuff for real and say, hey, if it doesn't work, then someone else will come back and cut. Why not just cut? Just cut, because that's what people said they were going to do this year, is we don't need revenue, let's cut. So cut, and then do this program, and if it actually raises some extra money, throw it into the budget reserve, start building up the cash flow account. I mean, I really honestly and genuinely don't see that as a fiscally conservative strategy, to bank on the risk, as opposed to doing what you know works, taking the cuts, owning the cuts. You know, I have a bill this year that cut $1 billion permanently out of the general fund. And, you know, there aren't a lot of authors who want to cut. I understand that. It's difficult. But that is what people said, that we don't need revenue, we should cut spending. So why not just cut?
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Lancheski, let me say at the outset that I believe our revenue people do a great job for Minnesota. And Minnesota is one of the better states when it comes to collecting what taxes are due. But we're not perfect. And we don't have all of the modern-day technological tools that we need to do a better job. And, we have to make reductions. And I think you're well aware of the fact that our returns for the additional investment we've made in compliance have been dwindling. I mean, at one time, years ago, we would get $10 for every $1 invested. That's down to four or thereabouts now. And, we have squeezed that turnip. Having been on tax committee with you for many years, the whole motivation was how can we generate some more revenue here to meet our needs, and we turned to tax compliance. Well, I think we've gone to that well enough for now. We need to instead work smarter. And I think by working smarter here, it's doing things like the tax analytics, where we can engage the experts who can be matches for all the sophisticated taxpayers we have. I mean, we have a lot of taxpayers, as you well know, that can hire the best accounting and the best legal advice to work the system to their maximum benefit. And I'm afraid that many times we're not a match, that our revenue department doesn't have the same kind of tools and expertise. And they have acknowledged that in discussions that I've had with them, and they've indicated an interest in this. But the legislature needs to tell revenue, it seems to me, that we want to give you some resources to be able to acquire those kinds of technical expertise that you need to do a better job here. And so that was a long answer to a long question, but...
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Lancheski.
And I'll just say this and leave it at that. I just want to protest what's going on here. I mean, really, I know Representative Lanning respects our state employees. I know that because I know Representative Lanning well, and I know he does. But honestly, we have a lot of professional people doing a great job leading the nation in this, and we're going to let them go and go out to bid for somebody we don't know on a maybe. And it just seems to me the safer way to budget this way would be, let's do some tax analytics, let these private companies, remember, folks, they make money on this. You know, our state employees don't make money on doing their job. They get paid. These companies make money with taxpayers' money. They make money to go do more compliance. And, of course, we've heard for years that, you know, we shouldn't have any more compliance. I know Representative Lanning didn't say that, and I think we agree on that. But we did have our Office of the Legislative Auditor do this report. And what it said, members, in its recommendations, any one of you can go read it. Never anywhere did it say, go out and find a private vendor in this country and see if they can do a better job than your state employees. And none of their findings or their recommendations ever suggested that. So I understand, you know, you have a target. You're using this money to make your target. I get how that works. But it is very frustrating to me for folks who, you know, would have championed cuts to not take the tough votes to do the cuts and instead to say, we're going to do compliance now, something that's been protested, quite frankly, by the now majority, not by you, Madam Chair, but in the tax committee. It's been a consistent, we can't do any more compliance because we've got a police state. Now we're going to have an Uber police state. We're going to have both the Department of Revenue and some outside vendors shaking you down. So, I want to lodge my concern about that. These numbers to me are not real, yet I respect Representative Lanning and what he's doing here, and I really hope that Governor Dayton will step up and say no in a huge way to this, and we should continue to let our state employees do this work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Would it be all right for me to ask something about another section in Article 3?
Yeah, I think we're on to, I think we're done with Articles 1 and 2, actually, so.
Okay. I'm looking, Representative Lanning, at Section 47, which is a reduction in the state workforce. And so the budgets that I am familiar with would be in the Pollution Control Agency or the DNR or Bowser. And I want to know what outcomes we will lose in those agencies with these cuts.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I'm not sure I follow the question that you're asking. If you would repeat the question.
Representative Wagenius.
I'd be glad to, Madam Chair. We have additional cuts to agencies. They have certain things that they perform, and I want to know what are the things that you are saying we don't want, what outcomes are you getting rid of with these cuts? So we need to be able to tell Minnesotans what these cuts mean.
Madam Chair,
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, we're not so presumptuous to say what individual departments ought to do with the reductions they have to make. I mean, we're saying that it's up to the individual departments to figure out how best to meet this objective. And when it comes to the workforce, we've got a huge number of state employees that are about to retire. And we believe that this 12% reduction goal that is for the next biennium, a good share of that can be accommodated through normal attrition, through retirements, early retirements. And how individual departments decide to make those reductions are up to individual departments. We're not about to micromanage any of the departments, telling them what employees, they ought to be trying to do within that department.
Representative Wagenius.
Madam Chair, in another part of the budget, you're talking about zero-based budgeting, where we build a budget from scratch based on outcomes. And now you're saying the reverse, that the legislature does not choose what outcomes we want. That doesn't make any sense. We are the ones that are doing this budget. We tell citizens these are the outcomes you should be expecting. I want to know from you guys what outcomes you're cutting. And the reason I bring this up, Madam Chair, is I look at the DNR budget in particular, where there is a $6 million cut in waters over and above what the governor made. And so that means half the hydrologists in that department are gone. That means in your area, and I chose this because it is something Representative Lanning is concerned about, we won't have dam safety inspections. I mean, how many more, you know, what schedule do you want dam safety inspections on? Right now, we're just barely meeting a schedule to keep dams safe. So how much more unsafe, or how much unsafe do you want dams? You're wiping out all money having to do with flooding. So I want to know, with what you're doing, what outcomes you're expecting to tell Minnesotans you don't want. It's a fair question. This is not a, even though somebody might retire, what job is it that you don't want done? What outcome? Is it no more permits in the water division? I mean, that's the other thing I look at. It seems very clear that on our one hand, we said we want faster permits. Hydrologists do permits, so we're going to say, nah. That was a bait and switch. What outcomes are we missing here?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I don't think you really want us telling you what the priorities ought to be in the environment area or any other area. That's not our purpose here. Our purpose is to establish a goal across the whole state where we need to reduce our workforce by 12%. Does that mean every department is going to reduce by or agency by 12%? No. There may be some where it makes no sense at all, especially if you've got a real small department that only has a couple of people or a handful of employees. This is a goal overall, and I don't think you want state government finance to be telling the Environment Committee what the priorities ought to be or any other committee.
Representative Wagenius.
Normally, Madam Chair, it is the committee that does the cuts so they know what the outcomes will be. This is abnormal. This is a... We have no idea what the outcomes are be, and that's what I hear you telling us. So then I would ask you, why in the world are you doing, having an initiative for zero-based budgeting? Because it's the very flip of what you're doing here. And how much does that zero-based budgeting initiative cost?
Representative Lang.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, the latest fiscal note, we've had, I don't know, umpteen fiscal notes on House File 2, is the cost of $1,300,000, is the cost of that. But Representative Wagenius, if Representative Banyan were here, we had quite a discussion about is this really zero-based or is it results-based management? And he would point out and argue that what we're doing with this provision is saying we need to take a look at all the budgets and build them from the ground up. Build them from the ground up. And not that's what he would say in terms of zero-based budgeting.
Representative Wagenius.
You know, I actually understand what you mean by zero-based budgeting, Madam Chair. But it flies in the face to say we're going to do zero-based budgeting on one hand and saying, oh, you guys, figure out what kind of cuts you want to make, and having no idea what the outcomes would be. I mean, if this was the plan, it should have been allocated to the various departments, and so Representative McNamara would have chosen, do we want to cut Bowser more? Do we want to cut Waters more? Do we want to cut PCA Waters more? You're giving citizens a pig in the poke. And it really, I mean, I'm just, this bill is just unusual, to say the best.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a few concerns about sections 41 and 42.
And pages.
That would be page 40 and 41. And, you know, there's a lot of language being deleted here. And, you know, I think this is, I think the purpose appears to me to enable more outsourcing. And my concern is, you know, there's no proof that we're going to save money here. And as a matter of fact, I think, you know, I carried legislation that related to MnDOT employees where, in fact, we had found, you know, the savings comes from having state employees do good quality work. In that legislation, which we appropriately, I think, called the Taxpayer Accountability Act, we called for an economic feasibility study so that we could really have a apples-to-apples comparison of state employees versus, you know, the outsourced contracts. And so you're taking away a lot of this language, enabling outsourcing, but without any kind of loop back so that we know that we're actually getting value for what you're proposing. And I guess I wanted the author to respond to that because, in fact, I think it goes the opposite direction in terms of what we may want to accomplish here. I mean, I just don't think there's any proof that simply outsourcing is actually cost-effective. And it certainly isn't, I think we can argue in many cases, from a quality perspective, but I think also from an economic perspective as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I think I'd like to have the author of this section respond to your question.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I'm not sure if I totally understood your argument because there's nothing in this provision that requires, or there's nothing in these changes that requires external contracting. Right now, we are precluded at the state level from contracting, so the implication seemed to be that we were going to require, and all we're doing is allowing and taking away the constraint on contracting at this point.
Any additional questions?
Well,
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I mean, yeah, so taking away the constraint, I said in my opening comments, I think helps enable that outsourcing to happen. It doesn't require it, doesn't prescribe it. It enables it, and I think once you enable something, you're sort of down a road where, you know, maybe we don't want to go in terms of the arguments around transparency and accountability related to the costs. But, you know, I'll... you know, I just wanted to point that out and express my concerns, Madam Chair.
Right, any additional questions? Mm-hmm. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I have a couple. One is on page 47, subdivision 6, the hiring freeze. It says that no state appointing authority may fill by outside hire a position vacated through a state employee participation in early retirement. I worked, in fact, with a gentleman in the audience, Tom Hansen, quite a bit on early retirement last session, so something I generally favor, or do favor, but what I was thinking of with that language, and I think it's Representative Downey's language that deals with early retirement, if I recall correctly. What about specific skills that may be needed to fill a position? It sounds like your wording here, Representative Downing, is rather obsolete, or I mean is rather tight, let me put it that way. Maybe obsolete as well. But what about a highly skilled state worker that opts for early retirement, and where you just simply to get somebody with those skills have to go to the outside? How do you handle that?
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Carlson, you've actually hit on what I think is an extremely important component of any early retirement incentive, and that is if we are going to incur an additional cost as the state to incentivize somebody to take an early retirement. I think the last thing we want to do is then hire behind that early retirement and simply create a new cost structure to continue that function. And so the intent of the hiring freeze for anybody who takes an early retirement is that we would do that in an intelligent and well-planned and strategic way. And you'll notice that the early retirement provision provides quite a bit of flexibility to the executive branch to target those early retirement offers in a way that it deems best to achieve this overall 12% reduction in this biennium. So again, we're trying to put a set of tools in the hands of the executive branch to get to the workforce targets that we're laying out here, and yet also make sure that we don't do it in a way that simply backfills with another 30-year kind of cost of an additional employee, and make sure that we have a hard hiring freeze behind the early retirement components.
Well, Madam Chair, I would just suggest you think through that situation. I know this deals with state employees, but sometimes that kind of an issue has surfaced, especially in my former field, education, where you need somebody with a specific skill, and yet there were early retirement incentives. And so sometimes there's still a savings because you might have a very senior employee that had certain skills that opts for early retirement, and you might be bringing in a newer employee that, depending on the kind of salary schedule that's available for that position. But when you have an absolute freeze like that, it doesn't seem to give you much flexibility, is my point, if that agency has a specific need. Madam Chair, by the way, while I think we're getting probably near the end here, we haven't talked about Section 4 much yet, but I do want to make sure I ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
When we get to that point. I do have some concerns about the delegation of power responsibility. You know, we're
you simply say to the agencies or the administration that they cut certain amounts. And I did check a little bit on the history of that, and that has been delegated before, but relatively small amounts. And we're now delegating to the agencies, and that first surfaced in House File 130, very large amounts. And what comes to my mind, you know, there was a federal court case dealing with the Congress of the United States where they were not allowed to delegate the responsibilities of Congress to the administration. The unallotment statute that we had, and I think Representative Slawick, in fact, may even have with her some of that language that dealt with that issue when we were dealing with unallotment. And we are in session, and so it's our responsibility to put the budget together as a legislative body. We're not out of session, which was a key point of that court case. So I just want to express that concern. But I do have a question of the author. There was reference made to the savings with the hiring freeze. What other items in the bill would be impacting negatively on workers' rights? Is the hiring freeze the only one you want to identify, or are there other issues that would deal with the intervention and contracts and so on that are in the bill?
Representative Lanning.
Madam Speaker and Representative Carlson, maybe we should talk about what is not in the bill. There is no provision in this bill that would reduce anyone's salary or compensation from what they get now. There have been ideas out there. There have been bills out there to do that. There's nothing in this bill that would reduce salaries. Secondly, there's nothing in this bill that would increase employee contributions to pensions. Nothing in the bill that would do that. And there's nothing in this bill that eliminates collective bargaining, including the ability to bargain on health benefits. That is still in the bill, that the ability to do that. And if you say that by a salary freeze that we're circumventing collective bargaining, I understand that argument. If you say that by having a reduction in workforce that somehow we're circumventing, I understand that, circumventing collective bargaining. But I think it's very clear that the legislature cannot afford increases in compensation. And to enter into the negotiation process to negotiate contracts that might result in increased compensation that we know the legislature is not in a position to fund, I think that's unfair to the whole collective bargaining process. I think it's better for us as a legislature to say we're not in a position to increase compensation and to do that up front rather than going through the motions with the contract negotiations only to find out that the legislature would not authorize that. And I think that we have taken provisions out of bills that did some things that were not very popular with collective bargaining organizations. For example, a 5% reduction in salary unless they had satisfactory performance, that has been taken out of the bill. And I think we've been respectful to the whole collective bargaining process with this bill, even though I recognize there are provisions here that are not real popular with union representatives.
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate what you're saying about what's not in the bill, but my question was what is in the bill that would impact, at least from my view, negatively on the collective bargaining process or workers' rights? You mentioned the freeze and the workforce reduction. Are there any other issues that are in the bill that should be identified then?
Representative Carlson, Representative Lanning can't take the bill from your view. So I think, you know, you say from your view, so...
Okay, are there any other issues that impact on our state employees that you didn't identify at this point?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, nothing that comes to mind right off the top. I'd have to... read the bill again with that question in mind. And
I appreciate the fact he probably doesn't have my view on the issue, but I was trying to identify, because there have been something like 50 bills introduced that, at least in my view, and I won't ask him to respond, would have a negative impact on our state workforce, or at least what many of us would think have a negative impact. And just wanted to make sure that we understood exactly what was in this bill in that regard. So it's the freeze and the workforce reduction that are the two items that apparently deal with the workforce issue. Thank you.
Representative Champion, then Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lanning, I was looking at this bill and looking at the various provisions that you have, and one of the provisions was on page 41 in section 42, where you intentionally take out language in that section where state employees must be looked upon first to see if they're able to provide certain identified services. Then I took a stroll over to the salary freeze, and it also captures information. Well, not just information, but positions that this bill is taking around collective bargaining. And there's a number of policy issues outlined in this bill. My specific question to you is, does this bill honor or adheres to Governor Dayton's notion that he wants fiscal bills to be free of policy? And it's also my understanding that position was also adhered to by Governor Pawlenty. So I want to know if you believe that it is consistent with that precedent, and if not, what are you proposing to do going forward in order to make sure that this particular bill gets due consideration?
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Champion, I'd be hard-pressed to identify any omnibus bill that was totally devoid of policy. I can't think of any. I don't think that's possible, because any finance bill is going to have policy implications, and this bill is no different than other omnibus bills that I've seen in my tenure here.
One follow-up?
Certainly, Representative Champion.
I understand that there's no fiscal bill that would not have policy implications. But wouldn't you agree that there's a difference between a bill having policy implications and policy being clearly articulated in it?
Representative Champion, I think that, I mean, you can give me your yes or no answer, but Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, Representative Champion, obviously there is a difference between implications and direct, but omnibus bills I'm familiar with that I've worked on over the years, there have been both policy implications and policy language in every one of the bills. I mean, I think that's just normal course with an omnibus bill.
Representative Champion, I just think, you know, we have to put these bills together the best we can as a legislature and move forward and have discussions with the executive branch. I'm guessing when all is said and done and all the dust settles, you're going to have some policy and some finance bills, whether it be policy that the governor wants or the legislature wants. It just kind of happens that way. So we can put things in letters in April, but the reality come May looks a little different from most people's perspective. So, Representative Kahn.
Well, just to answer Representative Carlson's question specifically, just going on page 59 lines, page 59 lines 10 through 12 is a specifically egregious section which voids part of the protections that we have against outsourcing. Particularly egregious because we've done all kinds of contracting with outside vendors in this area without needing to void those. So it's not only egregious, it's also unnecessary. But that's an example of attack upon the state workers.
So, Representative Carlson, you might have had better luck from your view asking the question of Representative Kahn.
I suspect that that might have been correct.
So, anyway, Representative Slawik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief response to Representative Carlson and then what Governor Dayton had to say. You know, what we said when we looked at this bill in committee, Representative Carlson, it has, workforce reduction, salary freezes, elimination of deputy assistant commissioner positions, consolidation of executive branch IT outsourcing, CGIP dependent verification audit, zero-based budgeting, and on and on and on. So it's like every provision you've ever thought might be hurtful to state employees is in this bill. And so it's a very, very difficult bill. It's all rolled in there, and I can't imagine it's all going to come out the same way. As far as what Governor Dayton had to say, this is about House File 130. Remember, that was the big mega bill we did, which was at the beginning of the year. He talked about that bill making inaccurate and undocumented assumptions about the amounts not yet encumbered for the fiscal year. He said, instead, you would abdicate your responsibility to make these difficult spending choices and your power to determine those cuts to an appointed official of the executive department, which is what this bill also does. This is both inappropriate and unconstitutional. And that's from his Veal letter on February 10th. So, needless to say, we're following a precedence of something that's already happened once this year, and it looks like parts of this bill might be unconstitutional, specifically the $130 million, $33, or what, $99 million.
Any additional questions or comments before we take the roll call vote on Senate File 1047 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Lanning, would you like the final word?
No. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the good questions and the conversation. This has not been an easy bill to put together, and I readily acknowledge that, and thank you for the discussion here tonight.
Madam Chair, I know he made the final comment, but I would like to make a request that we defeat the bill, and I would encourage a no vote.
So noted. Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Abler. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Briner.
No.
Representative Biskins.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth.
Aye.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Howes.
Yes.
Representative Huntley. Representative Kahn.
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Aye.
Representative Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Rukavina. Representative Slawik.
No.
Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Westrom.
Aye.
as opposed to the
Senate. Oh, no.
By a vote of 18 to 11, the motion prevails. The bill is passed as amended to the General Register. Members, we have to revert to the amendment to the budget resolution. Hopefully you're able to put your hands on those documents. The amendment to the resolution involves three components. Two of them kind of reflect a use it or lose it approach. The tax bill left the tax floor with an amount of $3,040,000 under target. The K-12 bill left the House floor $1,750,000 under target. And so those dollar amounts are recouped, and then there's a reduction in the net amount in Health and Human Services of $20,110,000. And that money is then being brought into the claims and other bills line with this amendment. And I'd be happy to stand for any questions on the A-13 amendment. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you are putting other bills in there, can I assume that that is for possible flooding?
Well, Representative Wagenius, we've had this discussion a number of times. That would be one possible use for the money. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. If that is a possibility, I'm hoping you're considering the possibility that we do the equal amount of flood prevention as we do of cleanup, because we are in a trajectory of just spending for taking care of floods, and it is my sense that constituents are getting rather unhappy about the fact that we're not doing prevention.
All right, thank you for those comments. Are there any other questions on the A-13 amendment? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, the two features that you mentioned, taxes and K-12, are easy to understand, but the $20 million out of Health and Human Services, and that bill is up at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So I know we can't designate within the budget resolution, but is there going to be an opportunity, because I assume that target is going to be met then tomorrow morning, if necessary, for some public input? Because that, along with a major amendment that we all know is coming in Health and Human Services, this $20 million is something that's brand new here today or tonight. I'd just like to know what the opportunity for people is to weigh in tomorrow on that, what I'll call the Abler Amendment. Plus the $20 million that's a brand new issue. And I don't dislike the goal of, because I've raised the question of flood relief. That's not the issue, but I think we have to have an understanding of what's happening in the Health and Human Services bill.
And Representative Carlson, it's my understanding, and I could be completely wrong, because this Health and Human Services area is not, I am far from even comfortable, let alone an expert in talking the language, et cetera, but it's my understanding that the Abler Amendment, in fact, will allow for increased spending in various areas. So I don't know what the need would be for public testimony, and that I don't believe there are going to be programs that are adversely affected by this, but let's get to tomorrow morning, look at what the impacts of the Abler Amendment are to the original bill, and if there's some compelling reason that we're making major changes to a program affecting the public, certainly I would consider testimony.
Okay, if you recall, I said if necessary, because I, like you, we don't know what apparently may be coming forward relative to that, and we may or may not have questions depending on what that additional target reduction means. But
And Representative
Carlson,
we'll
wait until the morning.
Yeah, I think the amendment has been posted for, I think, since Friday. I think my staff stayed here late Friday evening and put that amendment up on the website. So, people should have had an opportunity to review that.
And Might I ask then, Madam Chair, I do have an amendment, and do you want to vote on your amendment to the budget resolution first and then take the amendment that that I have, and I'd like to have it distributed if it hasn't been.
That would be the A14 amendment that you're referring
right.
to. Yeah, I'd prefer to consider the A13 amendment to the Ways and Means targets. Then we can have a discussion around the A14 amendment. Are there any additional questions on the A13 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Carlson, you have the A14 amendment.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I would like to move the amendment to the budget resolution. And members, I don't suppose everybody happens to have a copy of the rules with them, but what I will point out is Rule 4.03, Subdivision G, requires that when reporting a bill, the chair of the committee must certify to the House that the committee has reconciled the bill with the resolution. And we had quite a discussion about this section of the rules and taxes. The chair of the tax committee who is here may remember that discussion, and in fact certification came up in the debate this morning on re-referring the bill. It'll be before us tomorrow morning. A little bit of the history here, and I'm not sure exactly when it was eliminated, but at one time when the chair of Ways and Means reported a bill out, they certified that by having it printed in the journal that the bill was within its targets. And that's what this amendment to the resolution would do, is just formalize that like it once was, that when a bill is reported out, that the chair then certifies that the bill is within its targets with as defined by the budget resolution.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. And Mr. Marks is going to give us a little history of this particular measure.
Madam Chair, members, this version of the rules was first adopted in 1999 that required the certification. And initially when that was, as Representative Carlson had mentioned, when that was in place, there was when a bill passed Ways and Means, a letter was sent from the Ways and Means Chair to the Chief Clerk, and then that letter was printed in the journal. And I know that occurred beginning in 1999 for a number of years. I don't remember just when that was discontinued, but I recall the language in the rule wasn't changed. The discussion was that, this was a discussion that occurred with the chief clerk, that certification could occur by a separate letter, but by the fact that the committee passed the bill, that essentially was also a certification and was an indication of that Ways and Means was certifying that the bill met the budget resolution. I know that those letters and that certification in the journal has not occurred during the last 4 years, so it would have been sometime between 2003 and 2006 that the change occurred, but I don't recall just when.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, that's what I pointed out, that I'm not sure when the change took place. But that isn't the point. What I am attempting to do here with this amendment to the resolution is to formalize that so that it's actually printed in the journal that the bill meets its target. And that I don't think should be problematic, but it does formalize it, and it does revert back to what we did for several years and till sometime recently.
All right, and Representative Carlson, this would be my request. The amendment certainly didn't make deadline to be considered this evening. We actually received it a little after 5, so the case could be made that it didn't meet deadline for consideration in tomorrow's meeting either. However, I would at this point oppose this amendment. What I would really like to do is have an opportunity for you and I to sit down and have a conversation with the chief clerk about this, because it's my understanding he has some feelings about this process. I respect his input. I would appreciate the opportunity to the three of us sit down and have a discussion around it. I don't have a problem writing a letter if that's what seems to make sense, but there had to be some reason why this process stopped and the decision was made or agreed on that by virtue of the committee passing it, that was certifying. I just like a little more time to digest it and make sure that we have everybody, including the front desk, on board with whatever process we choose to move forward with.
I have two questions, Madam Chair. One is, what is the deadline?
5 p.m. the day before or as soon as practicable.
Okay, so did all of the amendments earlier today meet that?
It's my understanding they did. And I mean, I don't want to get hung up on the procedural thing. I think I've been given the minority great latitude here.
Yeah, it looks like 3:31, so it looks like they all did. Well, I'll take... I just think it should be formalized, and I'm very willing to, and I can count votes to, understand that you would be willing to enter into a dialogue. My question is, if we reached agreement... I don't know if the budget resolution will be before us again. Would you be willing, if we reach agreement, to bring the budget resolution before us so that we could entertain whatever that amendment would look like? That if the front desk and you and I and whomever you want to include would agree to. If that's the case, if I would have an opportunity to bring it forward, I'll withdraw the amendment and look forward to that discussion.
Well, Representative Carlson, it's my understanding that the language in your amendment pretty much mirrors the language in House rules. So we have a standard around this. You are saying written, but the House rules talks about the certification. I would hope that we'd just be able to come to some understanding as to what process that was going to follow. I don't know, amending the target in ways and means is the right way to approach this, but you know, certainly I'm willing to have the discussion.
Well, as I point out, the rule does say certification. It's right. Not clear on just how that happens. One interpretation would be, as Mr. Marks pointed out, that the action of the committee is certification, although I would point out that the rule says the chair has to certify it. It doesn't say the committee, it says the chair. So that's one of the reasons I wanted it formalized, and there is a difference between simply saying, well, committee action then certified it, and having it printed in the journal that the bill was in fact within its targets. But I'll withdraw the amendment, looking forward to some further discussion on it. I don't think it would do damage to your role as chair. In fact, your name would appear frequently in the journal. That wouldn't be all bad. So I withdraw the
Certainly answer. That's not something that I was working towards. all right. So we have passed the amendment, and I'm not sure if there's any other business coming before the committee. Members, we will start promptly at 8 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, and my understanding is we should hurry up and adjourn because there's a basketball game on. So with that, we'll adjourn. Thank you, members.